Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartztrauber, your host. On today's show, Apple refuses to comply with a court order to unlock one of the phones of the San Bernardino attackers in California in that recent terrorist attack. Joining me in our DC studio to discuss this is Shameless Francophone and President of Tech Freedom, Baron Soka. Baron, thank you for joining me.
Je suis présent.
So, Baron, the issue at hand. The FBI has possession of a phone which was used by one of the terrorists, and they cannot unlock its contents because they don't know the password. And guessing every possible combination would not work because in part of the Apple iPhone design is a mechanism that auto erases the data on the phone if you put in too many incorrect passwords. So the court, a federal judge, ordered Apple to install software that would disable the auto erase function, which would allow the FBI to use a method known as brute force, a hacking method where you just simply guess every single possible password under the sun until you get access. And they cited a 1789 law called the All Writs Act, which is designed to give courts the power to compel companies or individuals to give up information. So, Baron, what's going on here?
Well, let's first start with what the All Writs Act is supposed to be for. If you're in the business, for example, of collecting data for marketing purposes or keeping certain records, and it turns out that law enforcement has a need for that for some ongoing criminal case, or maybe there's some other plaintiff who needs it, you can be compelled, if you already have that data, to make that available. And that concept is really whether it's reasonable for you to provide that assistance. If you're making copies of data you already have, that's pretty clearly reasonable. The All Writs Act covers that. But this is the first time, or rather the second time. There was another related case last October where the magistrate judge in Brooklyn ruled against the FBI. These two cases are the first time where the law enforcement is really trying to use the All Writs Act to essentially change technology. They're asking for Apple to write a new version of the software for the phone, sign it, upload it to the phone so that the security functions on the phone can be compromised.
Now, is there really anything new here? I mean, if we take this outside of the digital realm and put it in the physical world, there's a need for courts to get evidence when there's a clear criminal act that was perpetrated. You know, if it's physical evidence, the courts can issue a warrant. And this happens, you know, hundreds, thousands of times. And just because it involves a technology company, is there really anything different here? I mean, what's the problem with the court asking Apple to help them get access to the phone?
Well, we're certainly not saying that Apple and other tech companies should be immune from these obligations. If you have data, just as I mentioned at the outset, and law enforcement has a legitimate need for it, you do have a duty to provide reasonable technical assistance to turn it over. But this issue is really different. This question is, do you have to re-engineer your software in order to give law enforcement that access? And not just re-engineer your software for a single phone, but really open the door to other potential uses. So let me just clarify two things here. The magistrate's order requires that Apple design software that will work only for this particular phone and then sign that software so that the FBI can install it on the phone and then, as you say, brute force decrypt the passwords. But there are really two, I think, sets of concerns here. One is that that software, once you've built that, you have it on the shelf, the way the magistrate seems to be looking at the standard that the courts have taken of reasonable technical assistance, he seems to be just asking, well, how much would it cost? How many man hours would it take to provide the technical solution? And once you build one, once you've designed that kind of software that will do that, you've then made it easier the next time. So if all you're looking at is what's the marginal cost to the tech company to comply with what law enforcement wants them to do, it's not hard to see how you would pretty quickly get to a point where law enforcement has gotten Apple to at least have inside its own library of software, a toolkit for giving law enforcement really whatever access it wants. And that might not just be in the future what they're asking for here of disabling that auto-delete function. It could be any number of other things that give law enforcement essentially backdoors into the devices.
So the White House got involved in this debate today because I think they were kind of caught off guard by the outcry on social media, people saying, you know, what the hell? Why are they asking Apple to do this? And the White House and people who agree with the federal court order, they're going to say, look, it's just this one phone. Like, right. All we're talking about is this one phone. It's not a big deal. But this is really part of a larger problem. And as you suggest, that software gets made. What's to say that Apple will have any justification to deny the next request, the request after that? And once they've made this possible, how can they ever say no again?
So I would look at it and imagine two axes on a graph. So axis number one is the vertical axis is how many phones will this work on? And the other axis is, well, what will it do? And on the how many phones will it work on, the White House and the magistrate claim that this is only going to be used for that one phone. And there are people who say, well, look, it's still going to be up to Apple to decide, are they going to sign a key for other phones? On the other hand, there are technologists who say that it may not be that simple. It may be that once the software is out there, that it could be used for or modified for other devices. And I'm not a technologist, so I really don't know the answer to that question. But it certainly opens the door to the software being used on multiple devices. And you can imagine other circumstances where the claim is made in the U.S. for a large number of devices, or in other countries where once the software exists, once people know in other countries that Apple has this capability, they're going to be coming to Apple a lot more often. And it's not just China. Apple, Tim Cook, when he made his statement, he singled out China, saying that part of the reason that Apple was reluctant to do this was they were afraid of what China might do. And some people have come back and said, well, but China's going to do whatever they want anyway, so why does it matter? I mean, do we really concerned about that? Well, it's really every government on the planet. And we've talked about this a little bit on the show when we had Stuart Baker on. In fact, there are countries like the Netherlands where companies just roll over and provide very easy access all the time to law enforcement. You could certainly imagine countries like those starting to use a tool like this much more often once the United States had not only morally legitimized it, but quite literally made sure that Apple had the software, had the capability to turn over data.
Yeah, it's important to put this into a larger context. So while many people could argue, including the White House, that this is just about one phone, this is not about encryption, it's hard to ignore the fact that we had Snowden revelations in 2013, which really damaged America's reputation on privacy and surveillance around the world. You've got a perception that American tech products are tainted, whether it's with this type of software or another type of software, sending the signal to other governments around the world and cyber criminals and hackers and potentially terrorists that, yes, this is possible. That's not a good thing. And we don't want to perpetuate the perception that if I'm a person in a foreign land, I don't want to buy an American product because it can be compromised by the government, which claims to have a moral high ground on privacy compared to countries like China and Russia.
Yeah, and I do want to be careful here. We've had a long internal discussion with other people about this who have other views, and they rightly point out that this is a very targeted approach. At least the magistrate order is really asking for software that is specific to one phone. And if that's how this goes in the future, we're not talking about a mass surveillance tool.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, again, not a technologist, don't know how this exactly might work, but it's not hard to imagine that a government like China or another government might go to Apple and ask for this kind of technological solution to be applied to a much larger number of phones. In fact, in the worst case scenario, you could imagine a country saying, well, look, if you're going to continue to import your phones into our market, we're going to require that you deploy this to all phones like that. And so you could imagine a sort of fracturing of the net, where in certain countries you could have certain security functions and in other countries you have vulnerabilities. And this could open the door to that.
And it's important to recognize who's asking. It's the FBI, which has made a lot of headlines this year, Director James Comey, asking for backdoors into tech products. So it's hard to just divorce the actors in this situation from the broader context. And is the FBI using the All Writs Act to really just test the limits of what it can ask tech companies to do to facilitate law enforcement investigations.
Right, right. Well, very well could be. I mean, the key point here is the magistrate, if you look at the order, it's really quite funny. They literally just cross out the word proposed, and that's the final order, which seems to indicate that they just did exactly what the FBI wanted, and they didn't really do any analysis of their own.
Yeah, so that's an interesting case just right there, is that the FBI is going to a judge and asking them to do something, and the judge is essentially just doing whatever it asked without analyzing it.
Yeah, and so that's the question, is how much analysis is going to happen here? So in other words, I don't want to say that the sky is falling and that necessarily any use of the All Writs Act is inappropriate. But if you're going to use it, and I just would emphasize again that this and that New York case, these are the first times that the All Writs Act has been used to require companies to turn over data they didn't otherwise have, to change how they were designing their systems. Now, if you're going to do that, you really need to have some meaningful test that weighs the interests at stake. And if all you do is ask, how technically difficult is it for Apple? How many man hours does it take their engineers? Well, first of all, you're going to miss the larger picture of other interests, of everyone's security and privacy and free expression and all those things. But second, you're inevitably going to wind up in a race to the bottom, because every single time you go through this, you're going to push the envelope one step further in terms of what is possible. And what are you going to be left with?
Yeah, and the court, it didn't seem like the court was really asking Apple the question, is it possible? It seemed like they had already decided it was possible, and they were just saying, go figure this out.
Well, indeed. So the real story here has yet to occur, I think. I mean, the magistrate essentially signed off on the FBI's order, and they've said to Apple, look, you have 5 days to explain to us why you can't do this. And so we're now going to have a hearing on this. There are many groups, civil liberties groups and groups that are concerned about security vulnerabilities, who are likely going to be weighing in on that. We may see briefs filed in early March. And so I think what you're going to see happen is the magistrate will make a decision about that. They'll probably rule in favor of the FBI, given that they didn't do any analysis the first time. And then that matter will be appealed to the Ninth Circuit. And the Ninth Circuit traditionally has been pretty open to privacy and civil liberties. So it's possible you could get a decision from the Ninth Circuit that actually reversed the magistrate and said that either the All Writs Act shouldn't be used this way, or that there should be a more careful weighing of the interests. And then the case would go to the Supreme Court. And so you could see the Supreme Court take this up pretty quickly.
And Apple's fighting the order. And as you say, they, you know, maybe the first step of the way, the FBI will win, but then it can escalate. What do you think of their case?
Oh, I think they have a very strong case for all the reasons we've been discussing here. I mean, it's just unclear. This is really largely a case of first impression. The previous attempt by the FBI last October actually failed. And the magistrate in that case said the FBI couldn't do what they wanted to do under the All Writs Act. But this is how law gets made. And I'm not one of those people who says that just because a law is old, we shouldn't be applying it. And I think, in fact, the Fourth Amendment's an old law, slightly less old than the All Writs Act, same period. The question is how we apply these laws. And the Fourth Amendment, for example, really went off the rails because in the 1960s, the courts started applying it in a kind of crazy way. And that led to that Electronic Communications Privacy Act problem that means that email today isn't protected. And so you could very well wind up in a way, in a situation where if the courts don't really lay out a meaningful standard here, you could lack meaningful protections, not just for privacy, but for user security. And you could wind up in a situation where it's all too easy for law enforcement here and in other countries to whittle away at security and require companies to compromise their own services.
I mean, there is definitely a delicious irony in bringing up old laws. As you mentioned, the Fourth Amendment, old law, still very good. It should apply to electronic communications like email. But of course, the same people who want to use the All Writs Act to force Apple to unlock this phone are the same institutions that are generally saying things like, well, the Fourth Amendment, you know, it was passed so long ago, it didn't envision the internet, so it really doesn't apply. So, I mean, clearly, actors in these debates are going to use the whole don't apply an old law to new tricks thing when it serves their purpose, even if, you know, it should be more consistent across the board. Now, it's not just that the FBI maybe is trying to unlock this phone. It could be also very related to the politics of this debate, right? Technologists have long been making an argument about encryption, that you just can't have a backdoor that only the good guys can use without compromising cybersecurity. Now, is the FBI backing Apple into a corner here? Now, this is not explicitly about encryption, but they are forcing Apple to admit potentially that what they're asking is technically feasible. So do you see this as the FBI kind of trying to push the public debate in their direction by getting technologists to say, well, yeah, we could do this, we just don't want to?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, remember that there are really two halves to the encryption debate. Most of the debate is about data in transit. So when we talk about end-to-end encryption, we're talking about me sending you information over a service and whether the company in the middle can read it, right? Here, we're talking about the other half of this, which is data at rest. It's on my device. It's not in transit. What do you do when you get access to the device?
Yeah, and the FBI already has the device. They just can't get in.
And in a way, what's really clever about this politically is that one of the arguments that we and others make when we push back against attempts to restrict end-to-end encryption for data that's in transit is we point out that that law enforcement does have access or means of getting access to data at rest, to attacking devices when they need to. And that, in many ways, really takes pressure off of the end-to-end encryption, because if it were true that there was no way to get into devices and you didn't have any other way of getting data, law enforcement would have, a much stronger argument for saying that they should have a backdoor into the services that transmit data from point A to point B. So in other words, they're sort of, law enforcement sort of trying to put us all on the spot and saying, well, you can't have it both ways. What do you want to give up?
Yeah, and some privacy advocates have really cynically, have accused the FBI of just cynically trying to grasp at straws to see what they could get. So they went to Congress, they asked for backdoors, didn't work. They went to the White House. The White House talked to some Silicon Valley companies, didn't get much there. They haven't explored an option we've talked about here with the FCC, but some privacy advocates are saying, well, now they're just going to go to the court because they've tried every single method they can to get more from companies and it hasn't worked. So this is their latest attempt. What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, well, the two things are parallel. In other words, the FBI last summer made a big push for Congress to do something about end-to-end encryption, and they didn't get that. And so the option that they have there of trying to go after that and restrict end-to-end encryption would be getting the FCC to use its authority under the Community Assistance to Law Enforcement Act to expand the scope of what is considered subject to that, what has to be wiretap ready.
Right. So whereas like a traditional telephone right now has to be wiretap ready, a service like iMessage or WhatsApp does not. So, you know, you and I send each other messages. We're the only ones who can read them. Someone walks into Tim Cook's office, puts a gun to his head, says, I want to know what I sent to Barron, and he can't help them.
Right. And so in a way, that option of trying to expand CALEA is the bypass to deal with the data in transit problem. Whereas the All Writs Act, which we're talking about here today, is the way to bypass the current law for data at rest.
Right.
And so what we're seeing is they're making their play here, and they're trying to see what they can get. And the beauty of it from their perspective is the All Writs Act is really incredibly short. It doesn't tell you how to deal with these questions. And so the courts, as I said, have interpreted it, as the magistrate interpreted it today, just to focus on technical feasibility and not to ask these other questions about what does it mean for compromising not just users' privacy. These debates often get framed as about law enforcement versus privacy, but security as well. And how do we prevent going down a slippery slope? You could do that. You could have a meaningful standard there. We haven't seen it yet, and we're not going to see it until the courts weigh in, because, look, you can't blame the FBI for doing its job. Any plaintiff, any government agency is always going to want to have the easiest time getting what they want.
Right.
They're never going to go in and say, well, we propose the following test that will make it harder for us to get access to data.
Of course.
Right? That's got to come from a back and forth, and that back and forth really hasn't happened yet, and you're not going to see it happen until that appeals process plays out, as I said, first before the magistrate, probably a pro forma thing we expect to lose, then before the Ninth Circuit, and ultimately at the Supreme Court. And the interesting thing is about Justice Scalia's passing means that if the Ninth Circuit decides in our favor and says that really the All Writs Act shouldn't be used in this way or there should be a higher burden, that decision will very likely stand because the court will probably deadlock 4-4, and so that'll be the final word. Although I will say, it's not clear how Justice Scalia would have voted here. He often described himself as the criminal defendant's best friend. He's, in fact, very famous for having really totally changed the right of confrontation of witnesses in a way that really helped all criminal defendants. And so not clear what he would have said here. I think you're going to see a lot of strange left-right alliances with conservatives and libertarians joining forces with civil liberties advocates on the left and technologists in what I think will be a really interesting debate.
Yeah, I mean, this debate is clearly going to rage. I mean, the Apple letter today really dominated the news cycle, and this issue is not going away. And it's important to recognize that this is not a simplistic debate about privacy versus security and whether you should have one or the other. This is about security versus security. This is about physical security, cybersecurity, the trade-offs involved with using a law like the All Writs Act to compel companies to do things, the trade-offs between due process and privacy, and we'll certainly be monitoring them and talking about them on the show. Now, listeners who've been with us since the very beginning might have noticed that we debuted a segment in our introductory episode known as Tech Derp. Did something silly happen in the world of tech? And other than us not doing that segment for about 20 episodes and bringing it back now, I've got a different derp for you today. Uber recently had to settle claims that its safe rider's fee was misleading to customers. So a bunch of lawyers got together and did a class action lawsuit. And they got $28.5 million from Uber. Sounds like a lot of money, right? The problem is that will be divided evenly among 25 million riders after attorney's fees. So these riders might be lucky if they see a dollar, and a bunch of lawyers just got rich. So good job suing Uber. Sure, that worked out well for you.
And the bottom line here is that Uber simply changed the name of the safe rider's fee to some generic term like a rider.
Yeah, trust me, trusted riders, or, you know, fuzzies and unicorns, well, whatever it is.
What a great victory for consumers.
Yes, yes, you know, that dollar is really going to go a long way towards one Uber ride. Well, that's it for today's show. My guest has been Baron Soka. Thank you for joining me, Baron.
Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear, or even if you don't, leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.